Welcome to Park Spark, the podcast of the Florida Recreation and Park Association. We're here to talk about all the ways it starts in parks.
All right, well, this is Park Spark, and I am your guest host, Lynn Clark, from the city of Naples. And with me is Dawn Llewellyn. She's going to introduce herself.
Hey, everybody. Dawn Llewellyn. I'm with Bay Pines VA Healthcare System, and been a therapist for over 20 plus years. Does that make me well seasoned?
Definitely.
About you, Lynn? Where are you at now?
I am with the city of Naples. I've actually been with the city for 15 years, but I was in Collier County for 5 years before that, so I'm also well seasoned and have my over 20 years in. And I'm the rec therapist at a community center, and also the general supervisor, if you will, of the community center. So oversee the kind of the whole thing, the whole show. So we want to talk a little bit about therapeutic rec today and what
Absolutely.
We do and how we can help other organizations out there and what we're doing. I did a session today at FRPA on training staff to do the TR part of the program. And one of the problematic situations with therapeutic rec specialists is that we're often a team of one. And some people see it as a risk to our profession to train other people to do what we do, but almost I see it almost as a necessity because we're not getting more rec therapists in our buildings. So I thought it was really important to do that today. And I know, Dawn, you have been a team of one in public, and now unfortunately you are a team of several.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. So it went really well. What are some of your experiences, Dawn, with training staff to do some rec therapy?
You know, I kind of go along the same lines with you. I really like that agencies that do have at least one rec therapist. Now, I'm not asking for them to have more than one, right? But I think that those agencies that have one really show the value and what it is going to bring to their department. But when we don't have that or it's not fixed into the budget, I think having those staff trained as well as we can, and by us going and doing trainings, I know you go out and do some trainings with staff, and I do as well, but I think if we can get them trained to a point to where they can at least be somewhat sustainable, I think that is a perk for the entire department and the field of parks and recreation, because like you said, we're not getting a whole lot of CTRSs in the system. So how can we help our communities, for those of us that do have that knowledge base, and help them grow, for sure?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things I mentioned in the training this morning is that how important it is to have a connection to a CTRS. I mean, ideally, like, every department would have at least one rec therapist on staff.
Ideally.
Because, what we do isn't rocket science, but we've taken recreation and we've learned like a little bit more, and not just a little bit more about recreation, but a little bit more about body and physiology and anatomy and different things like that come in really helpful. And like one of the things I said today is if a kid with Down syndrome comes into your program and they want to do basketball or they want to do football or they want to do swimming or they want to do summer camp or after school program, legally, you let them in, but it is really nice to have somebody on staff that knows what questions to ask to make sure that kid is safe in your program. So I said this morning, I said, so how many of you in general rec would know to ask, does that kid have atlanto axial instability? I'm like, because that's a super important thing, because that means the neck bones haven't fused together correctly. And if you put them on a bounce house, not only do they have Down syndrome, but they could possibly be in a wheelchair for the rest of their life. And so those are the things that a rec therapist would know that maybe a general rec folk wouldn't know, and just to have that resource to go to. And so I think it's just super important to, if you don't have a rec therapist on staff, you need to have somebody in mind that you can call on for those things. You need to contract with them. You need to somehow connect with them so that you can provide the services to the best of your ability. We talked about this weekend about equity and inclusion and everything like that. And all that is great if it can be done safely.
Correct.
So, you know.
Yeah. And I think, too, is for those agencies that don't have a CTRS on staff, getting their staff trained in certain things, whether it's inclusion or how to accommodate, how to make modifications. Because legally, like you said, they're coming to the programs. You cannot tell them no just because they have a diagnosis. And I think the more that we can educate and the more that we can help our general population colleagues, yeah, you know, the better it's going to, I mean, they're all part of our community.
Absolutely.
So just because this person maybe is coming into your facility, or maybe this one's not coming in, maybe they don't feel welcome, or maybe they just don't feel like the staff is competent enough. You know, I think a lot of the staff can come up with some pretty creative ideas on how to modify things. And if they don't know, all we have to do is just ask the kids. They come up with some amazing, they do really come up with some amazing things. And over the last 20, you know, I was in community for 20 years before going into the clinical, back into clinical. And you can see some amazing staff out there that really want to make a difference and want to include, but sometimes they just don't have the skill set or the knowledge. And that's where, to me, I look at us and say, all right, how can we help them gain that skill set to a point to where they can be comfortable and be like, all right, we're ready. Bring anything on and we're ready. But then also having us as a resource. Hey, you know, I always tell everybody if they come to any of my sessions or as I meet people, I'm like, use me as a resource.
Yep.
Call me, email me, you know. Don't Facebook me. I ain't on there. So, but, you know, those are those things that if I can give them. Now, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Absolutely.
So if we offer these services and people don't take the opportunity to utilize that, that's another story, mm-hmm, right? I think, too, is there's a big push with agencies becoming accredited. And what a lot of people don't understand is there is a huge piece in there in inclusion and disabilities and therapeutic rec, and those are things that they're going to have to be prepared, or they're going to get necessarily, for lack of a better word, dinged on because they're not up to, and not everybody, we think maybe we have ADA down, but then program access, you're looking at a whole nother ball game. Yep. It's not the same as, okay, well, there's a curb cut there. It is, are your forms ADA compliant? Is your website ADA compliant? So all those things kind of factor in.
Right.
So.
Right. And I think that, you know, for most people if lack of a better word, the disability world, mm-hmm, they're not looking for perfection. Right. They're looking for effort, mm-hmm, you know? And if they can go into an agency and they can say they are trying to make this as good for me as they possibly can, mm-hmm, like right now, you know, and those people are making an effort for me, then they are usually okay, mm-hmm, you know, and they will then try to make whatever accommodation they can to make it even better for themselves, right, you know. And so I think that is really an important factor. I think when organizations, when either private or municipalities or leagues or whatever go, well, that we just can't. And they just put up this wall, this barrier of, well, we can't do this. We can't even try. It's almost like, oh my gosh, like, what are you afraid of? Like, are you afraid of being more equitable in your programming? Are you afraid of inclusion? Like, what are those fears that are stopping you from going on and doing this? And there's just so many benefits that come out of having inclusive programming. You know, you had mentioned the kids and how adaptive they are. I think it is so incredibly cool. Like when a kid in my program that's on the autism spectrum, or they have Down syndrome or CP, or they're in a wheelchair and they get their first invitation to a birthday party.
Yes.
I mean, like, there's some silent choked back tears in my eyes, you know, of like, we did that. They got invited to a birthday party.
The confetti fountain.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, you know, exactly, dancing around.
And absolutely. Oh my gosh, it's not just affects that kid, but you know what? Like, those parents are over the moon excited. Like, they're just like, oh my gosh, my kid has a friend. My kid's going to be okay, you know? And when your kid makes, like even my own kids, you know, like I was so excited they went to middle school this year and they came home on the second day of school and my daughter had met two other people because they went to a middle school that wasn't a feeder school from the elementary school that they went to. And there was a lot of anxiety in my house, mm-hmm, this summer getting ready for middle school. And when your kid makes a friend, mm-hmm. it is the best feeling as a parent. You're like, okay. And you can imagine like these parents that have kids with disabilities and they have differences, like, you know, and they may not look different, but they definitely speak different, or they don't speak at all. Or they, you know, it is just, it's such a great thing. And to see those adaptations, and then it's really cool to see it spill over into the schools, and that these guys then have somebody they can identify with in the school. And they're like giving a high five at lunch. A typical kid came and gave an ESE kit, or we call in our world, it's MC now.
Yes.
And a kid in MC classes came and gave an MC kid a high five. Mm-hmm. Like, it blows the school's mind because they haven't been able to figure out how to do this. And we did, you know, we figured it out. And that's like one of the coolest feelings.
I think sometimes people are intimidated, but it's not this like, you know, college, you know, brain surgery kind of procedure. I mean, if I go into something, I want to feel like I'm welcome, right? And you said it, it's when those kids are getting high fives from other kids, and it's like, you know, we're crossing over, and it's good for the community, it's good for everybody. And where everybody is so socially distanced right now, right? And that contact and just coming into play, we've just now expanded their advocates by how many, you yeah. know, for every person that we can connect those kids to. And sometimes those kids need help, or our participants need help in making those connections. Or you have a senior that comes into your facility and you're the only person that they come in contact with because they live alone. They're not going out, you know? Right. So, you know, to me, the therapeutic realm, yeah, I think a lot of focus is on kids, you know, right. especially kids with disabilities. But I think we sometimes forget about those teens and those adults, and those even our seasoned
yes.
adults, right? We'll call them seasoned adults. I there like that a little bit better. Yes.
It gets better and better every year.
Progress, you know? but as we look at that, you know, those are gaps too that yeah. we're missing. And if we can start closing some of those gaps, that community gets stronger. The community gets tighter. And then there is not, oh, that's so-and-so with, you know, diabetes, or that's, you know, so-and-so with, you know, who uses a wheelchair.
Right.
It is, you don't see those things.
Right.
It just becomes, hey, there's my friend, or there's so-and-so, and that's right. where it ends. So I think the collaboration between rec therapy and our general parks and rec professionals, I think, is a huge one.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much room still in Florida for such growth.
Yes.
You know, for sure, there's definitely departments that are ahead of others, and others that are, you know, maybe one department's a little more rural than another, and they don't tend to see or don't have to have such big programs. But it doesn't have to be a big program.
Nope.
It could be something as simple. I have to remember, you know, when I was in community, we would do family events. And I remember we did a Valentine's dance for kids and families with autism. And it was very small. It was very, you know, we had gluten-free, you know, we rolled out the red carpet. We got a lot of sponsors in the community. And then we said, okay, well, the music isn't going to start until this designated time. So then it allowed kids that did not like the loud sound to be able to come and participate with their families.
Nice.
And then afterwards, they knew at this time music was going to crank up and we were going to have a party. But we had a photo booth there. And I remember this family coming to me and they said, you know, this is the first family photo we've ever had.
Oh, wow.
Because our child will not sit still long enough for us to get a photo or to even look at the camera.
Yeah.
And to me, it's still to this day, it makes me cry. But,
yep.
you know, that's why we do what we do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's like those countless stories, you know, like when you were talking about that, I got a letter. It was actually the first two kids that I taught the Swim Central program to. Both of them mm-hmm. had autism. And I got a letter afterwards from the parents that said, and it came like quite a bit after I taught them in March. And like, I got this letter in July. And they're like, we just want to let you know that you've changed our family's life forever, because for the first time, we went out on a boat as a family. They're like, as a husband and wife, we've never been out on our boat together. Mm-hmm. And like, I was like, holy moly. They're like, because we finally feel, we still use life jackets, but he constantly takes those off because of sensory, and we finally feel like he wouldn't die. You know, and I mean, like that's life changing. That's not just life changing for that kid. That's life changing for that entire family. And so the effect is so great. And I think that the other thing, you know, just kind of bringing that back to like what some of the general rec guys can do. One of the things that I think that our department does very, very well is that we train on disability awareness, not only to our staff, but we train to our participants on disability awareness.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm very honest and like, I probably am not so PC and I'm probably don't follow all the rules. And if you're out there and you're like, oh, I'm like, I can hear my friends in Broward and in Miami-Dade, like telling me that's HIPAA, Lynn, you can't do that. You can't do that. But I always tell the parents, I'm like, listen, I'm going to talk about Down syndrome and exactly what it is. And I'm probably going to show your kid's hand that they have a straight line across their hand and other people in the world don't, because other kids think that's cool. And that's going to make your kid cool. I was like, and I'm going to talk about autism and I'm going to talk about CP. And you know what? Then I open it up and I let the kid ask any question that they want to. And they're going to ask me how your kid goes to the bathroom when they sit in a wheelchair all day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that because that's what they want to know and how they put their shoes on. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, and so that's one of the things, because I am a firm believer that, and I really wish that adults would take hold of this too in many aspects of life. I think that we would be better off. And I think that equity and inclusion and acceptance of life would be a little bit better, that we truly only make fun of. We truly only bully, if you will, what we don't understand.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Because if you understand why a kid with CP drools, if you understand that that is a signal that goes from their brain and goes down into their spinal cord and it gets messed up and their left foot kicks instead of swallowing, well, that's really not that much fun to make fun of, because you now understand why he does it. Understanding and educating ourselves on differences. And I mean, that can go for, I mean, this is a therapeutic rec. Let's not get into too much in the world these days, but you know, oh my gosh, if we understood why people were hanging on the outside of a plane, maybe we understand immigration a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we would understand religions a little bit more. Maybe we would have a little bit more of acceptance for one another if we got vaccinated or not, because we don't take the time to understand the other person's why. Mm-hmm. We don't take that time. Like, it's not fun to make fun of somebody that drools when you understand why they drool.
Absolutely.
And I find it so important. And I hope that departments really do look into it that don't have somebody on staff and reach out to find somebody that they can, that has a passion for therapeutic rec and has a passion for truly serving everybody in the community.
Hey listener, it's Nathan Allman at Rep Services. There's been so much change this past year, but one thing has stayed the same. People need parks. After the COVID lockdown, communities value public spaces more than ever, and Rep Services is here to help you create great places in a fun, sustainable, and honorable way. I personally want to thank all FRPA members who continue to trust Rep Services with your playground, shade, shelter, and site furnishing projects. Whether it's a new park project or replacement parts, Rep Services is here to help. To see what we've been up to, check us out at www.repservices.com or on our Instagram page at RepServicesFL. If you still want to learn more about us, reach out to me directly at Nathan@RepServices.com. Now, let's get back to the show.
Therapeutic rec, just as you said, I don't think it's just reaching to kids or adults or teens or with those diagnosed disabilities. I say diagnosed because we also reach the undiagnosed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because we've all had that in our program where we're like, whoa, what is going on here? But, you know, it's not just that. It is really trying to get that equity and that inclusion in everything that we do and being able to understand that. So,
yeah. Well, and I think too is that I think sometimes people forget that the disability population has an open enrollment policy. It could be anybody at any time.
Yeah.
For any reason, you know, maybe you're goofing around in the bathroom, you slip and you hit your head. Yes. And now, you know, you're in a wheelchair and you're on oxygen, and that's where, you know, and I've known incidents where that has happened.
Yeah.
And it is life changing, and reaching those families and being there for those families. I have never walked into an employer's place, gone into work, and said, "All right, I really don't care today. I'm just gonna." To me, we've known each other a long time. I'm very passionate. You are as well. And to me, it is trying to make sure that we are doing the most that we can for everybody. Now, mm-hmm. we don't have to do it all.
Nope.
But
we have to get better about that.
Right? We do. We have to learn to say no sometimes. But I think, too, is that there can be so much that we have as far as resources that people are not necessarily aware of. Mm. And I think therapeutics is that. I look at it where I'm at now, and I look at it as it's the glue. It's the glue that kind of connects all the little different pieces.
Right.
And then it brings it all in. But, you know, educating, we talked about that, you know, educating the kids and why they do this or why they do that. I know you've done this with your kids, and I've done this with my daughter. And since they were little, they've either gone to events with us, mm-hmm. right? Or we've educated them. My daughter swam many seasons as a unified partner during practice for Special Olympics yep. swimming. And she will be the first one if she sees somebody, and she'll go over, introduce. And I'm like, how did this? I'm like, oh, now I know how it happened. It was Matt. It was, right. you know, it was right. her being educated, and it's okay to ask questions.
Yes.
You know, and I know a lot of adults are afraid to ask questions. They're probably like, oh, don't stare. Well, oftentimes we stare because we're curious.
Yep.
And if we don't satisfy that curiosity and learn from that curiosity, then we become ignorant.
Yep.
In a way that sometimes is hard to reverse.
Yep.
I remember going to school with kids, and they had a special wing, and that was where everybody that had anything,
yep.
any diagnosis, even if they were in a wheelchair, but you know, cognitive, they were fine. They all went to that one wing. You never saw them, you know. And I remember kids making fun of them, and I was like, "Why? What is so?" And that I know for me was my turning point of directing me into therapeutic recreation, because I was like, "Well, why can't they?" You know, we've got the U.S. Paralympics going on right now.
Oh, which has been phenomenal.
Oh my goodness! You know, I'm like, if you just sit and you watch just for even 20, 30 minutes, I mean, they've got former Paralympians commentating, right? And they're going through and they're telling you how they get division, how they have their different categories and how they're classified and all this. And I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay. Keep watching. And I will be glued to the TV watching that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what an education. I mean, they have really stepped up this year with this Olympics in Tokyo with, you know, a learning opportunity that's available to anybody that has yes. television or can stream.
You also have to watch with they are trained athletes, because I watch and I'm like, oh no, they don't have any legs. They just ran a 5K faster than I could ever imagine.
Uh-huh,
I was like, and I feel completely 100% inadequate right now. So,
you know? and even too, I mean, watching it the other night, I was watching the triathlon, mm-hmm. but it was for the blind division. And my husband says, how do they know where to go? How do they? And I was like, so I was even educating my husband on something that I've done for the last 20 plus years, but because he had not really seen it in person, how do we get those events? And those events coming into a community are huge, especially right. if you're looking for economic development and stuff like that. That's another way therapeutics factors into that as well. I mean, when I was in Clearwater, we had wheelchair tennis tournaments. We had wheelchair basketball tournament, which was a regional. So there was people coming in. So there's economic development in that. The matter of having facilities that will be appropriate, you know, courts that are large enough for wheelchair sports, not smaller courts. You know, you need a collegiate size court for a lot of these sports, and a lot of facilities aren't building them. Just different things that we can do as we're forward planning, mm-hmm. and expanding some of that. And,
right.
if for some agencies it's a matter of checking a box, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you're going to learn a lot along the way before you can check that box.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right, Wes, saying like some of this comes later in life. I think that's one of the really cool things about watching the Paralympics is seeing how a lot of the Paralympic athletes, some of them have had this whatever it qualifies them for Paralympics, mm-hmm. their entire life, but so many of them got it later in life, and they have embraced it and overcome it and shown how that they have been able to thrive in a community setting, in the sports world setting, even though they have this thing that a lot of us would see as a insurmountable challenge. I remember when I was in school, this really stuck with me. And I think a lot of stuff in school, like I learned, I said, man, you really just have to get in the field and experience some of this. Mm-hmm. But this like really struck with me because I thought it sounded so ridiculous at the time. But in our textbook, it was, if you're not diagnosed with, if you're not an amputee or you don't have Down syndrome or you don't have CP, then you're a TAB. And I was like, a what? A temporarily abled body. That at some point in our life, we are all going to need assistance with something.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it really does. Like, and as you age, and if really aging is what makes you, you know, and maybe it's not that you need assisted living facility, you know, but I wear glasses. Like, mm-hmm. and I legit can't get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom without putting those bad boys on, you know, like, so I had a temporarily abled body until I was in sixth grade. And now I need a device to help me with that, you know? And I think that that's where it comes. And if you can put it in that perspective, that everybody has something that they needed some assistance with, there's a organization down by us that says we don't serve people with disabilities. We see people with additional needs. So, and they've really tried to change the verbiage of mm-hmm. what we call. And I try. I've never been very good with changing my verbiage because after you do it for so many. But they're like, no, all people have needs and some people have additional needs. And I was like, well, that was a really great way to put that because it just really is one of those things that, you know, mm-hmm. we all do.
And if we can go away from and not focus on the disability, but focus on the ability.
Yes.
It changes the game so much.
Yep.
You know, if I go in and I interview for a job, I want you to look at what my qualities are. I don't want you looking at what I haven't learned yet.
Exactly.
What I can't do yet.
Exactly.
You know, I have no knowledge base, but look at what my strengths are and let me play to my strengths.
Yep.
Because they'll surprise you.
Right. And give me the opportunity to learn.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I think that this is so, you know, we sometimes put people, well, they can do this and this is what they can do. Well, if you never teach them how to do this, they're never going to be able to get there because we all need to be taught things. So it is one of those things that is a continual learning process, and learning processes are the same for everybody else. They're just sometimes at different speeds, mm-hmm. you know? And so we need to be cognizant of that and aware of that. And I think sometimes with my like ADHD brain, like I like immediate results, mm-hmm. and sometimes working with individuals with disabilities, those results come in a slower pace and
Absolutely.
We don't always see it, but they're there and you're making an impact. And if you can remember that and mm-hmm. you go, you know what, today that wasn't a success, but you know what, I'm going to try it tomorrow. And I'll never forget. I had this guy, I've had him in my program since he was a young kid. Since he was probably 7, I've had him, and he has, now aged out of my programming, you know, out of my kid programming. And I worked with him, for 2 years on taking the recyclables out in our community center. Every day after school, he would come in and we would take the recyclables out. And I was so excited because he finally came in one day, you know, and there's all steps, and I did it with him, and we, mm-hmm. we carried it together. And it, when you take the recyclables out, you need a key card to get back into the building. And so that's all a process. And he came in one day and he grabbed my keys out of my pocket and he grabbed the recyclables, and he's totally nonverbal. He has CP, and he walked him down and he let himself out and he emptied the recyclables in the right container. And he came back, and this was our big hangup. We couldn't figure out how to get back in the building. This was always our really big mm-hmm. hangup. And he put it up there, and like, you know, I have a bunch of keys, and like, I think the right one hit the pad, and the door opened, and I was like, oh my God, he did it. It took us 2 years. It took us 2 years, but he did it. It was great. Like, I called my parents. Like, I was like, we did it. He did it. He got it. He was successful, you know, and, you know, and it was all a process. And he made little steps along the way, but we finally put it all together. And those are the great, great moments. And there's so many little ones that go into it, but those are really the great moments. And so I think that if you're not including people, if you're not accepting people into your program with those types of needs, of those additional needs that they have, you're missing out on this.
Yes.
Like, yes, you're missing out on helping them, but you're missing out on a professional feeling that is going to keep you going in this field for much longer than you could ever imagine. You know, like that was years ago. And like, I literally have goosebumps. My hair is standing up on my arm because like it happened. And those things are invaluable to the families, to the kids, but also to us, mm-hmm. you know, like, we're in a field that makes a difference. We're in a field that has the ability to make bigger difference than what we're actually making right now. And like, are we going to take those first steps? You know, are we gonna make that happen? You know, I get discouraged just like everybody else, but I truly believe that recreation needs to be the leader in that equity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. If we don't take that lead, what other field is gonna do it? Banking? I mean, the schools are not going to do it. The schools in Florida are not going to do it. DCF's not going to do it. You know, Publix is making some strides. Publix mm-hmm. is doing pretty well. But if you look at companies around our state, who can make the most impact the quickest? It is definitely Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by you spending that time with him for that 2 years, and yes, the progress is slower. And sometimes we're not on the freeway. Sometimes we got to get off at the rest area, take a little pause and slow down a little bit. But you stuck with it for two years. Now he has the opportunity for possible job employment.
Absolutely.
Right? Or volunteering and being a productive part of his community. You know, I love when I would see kids age out, and my goal was always, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we got to kind of encourage the parents a little bit,
right?
You know, hey, why does he have to stay at home with you? Why can he not live on his own? Or why can he not do this? Or, you know, so sometimes we have to even open those eyes.
Absolutely.
as a professional. But if we can take and open the eyes of our community professionals, I think that the opportunity volunteers. I will tell you, if you get a kid with autism.
Oh, best volunteer.
Best volunteer, right? Many of them are very rule-driven. They're very
task-oriented.
Oh, yeah. You want something done, it's going to be done. So you tell them exactly how you want it, and it'll be done exactly the way you want it. But if you want creativity, that's when we go over and we go into another pool of kids that were adults that have disabilities, because everybody has something to offer.
Absolutely.
And if we all offered the same thing, could you imagine how boring this world would be?
Boring.
Oh, yep. Just thinking about it makes me, ugh. You know? So I think those opportunities, and whether we stop, and hopefully COVID has helped people kind of slow down. They're not getting maybe necessarily the flow that's coming through their facilities right mm-hmm. now. Well, here's the time to start building that rapport.
This aspect of it, right.
And
we got to start all over anyway. So why not start building that in slowly with it? You know, I think that is a fantastic idea.
And you build a collaboration with the families, but you also build that collaboration with those other agencies in your community
right.
that are working with people with disabilities already.
Well, like your organization, like the VA has a huge population of individuals that either have a physical or a cognitive due to injury or a mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's so much going on with our vets. And like, what an honor to have vets come to our park because we're willing to help them. Yes. I mean, they served for us. And now they're coming to us and going, okay, I need you. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Like, we actually get to give something back. That would be phenomenal, you know. I mean, if we could offer some of those things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think a great contact. And, you know, I often focus on community because that's what I'm in. But you being in the VA and being in community for quite a while, you know, you get that connection and you understand how beneficial that can be. You know, if we're willing to open our doors to that and willing to be able to accept those ladies and those guys in that have given so much for this country.
And I'll tell you, being in the VA system, I'm looking to our communities and saying, what are you offering?
Right.
What do you have available? You know, is there a veteran discount? Is there, you know, do you have a pool? Because I recommend aquatics all the time because it helps so much with pain.
Yeah.
And that is a huge one. So if we can complete the circle and kind of connect all the dots, there should be you should almost not see where the lines are drawn.
Right.
They should just blend right together and just merge and be like, oh yeah, you're in this area. Oh, go right here, here, and here and try these. And then that way they can start building theirs. And that gives them the opportunity to get involved in their community.
Right. I think it would be really phenomenal at some point in Florida. If we actually had to advertise for our programs again. You know, and what I mean by that is we had a new director this year and he's like, what do you do to market? And I'm like, oh, we tell our parents not to tell anyone else. I mean, we are so overwhelmed with people because we do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not that much more out there, you know, and I remember, a lot of this is like pre-COVID, like, so you take it for what it is, because a lot has changed, but, mm-hmm. you know, I remember, like, being in the county 15 years ago, and there was a lot of, we need to get out and market our camp better than their camp, because we need kids in our camp and not their camp. Wouldn't it be fantastic if we had to do that for individuals with disabilities?
Absolutely.
Like, if I actually had to go market something, mm-hmm. like, I haven't had to do a flyer in 20 years, you know, because once the word gets out that you do it well,
mm-hmm.
They come. Like, I don't even know where they come from sometimes, but they come, and it would be great if all of our state had those choices. Yes. They didn't have to go to that one or those couple, you know, because there is another program in my county now, which I'm very excited about. It's different from mine. I wouldn't call it, there's no competition. Like, there's so many people that need help. So it's not competitive. It's different. You know, right. We both run different programming, but we both serve whoever wants to be. It's both inclusive based, so, which is fantastic.
And
so,
we're not all, it's not like a sports league where you've got sports league and then you've got club teams and travel teams and all right. that on top of each other. That is not the case.
No.
We are kind of holding back the masses because there is no options.
Exactly.
And to me, that's a disservice to our communities because I'll tell you, those people are taxpayers too.
Right. Well, exactly. And, you know, like if my kid wanted to join a T-ball program, I could choose from about six
right.
in my organization. But if a kid with a disability wanted to go to a camp, out of the literally probably 100 camps in the county that are there, they have two choices. And we're a big county. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a little city, but I'm a little city in a big county. You know, there should be so many choices that one of us has to go out of business,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, and that's just not how it is. So it would be really great. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right, Don. Well, I have had a phenomenal time talking to you about this stuff and going back and forth. We've known each other for a long time. Thank you so much for taking the time for doing this. And we thank FRPA for putting this out there. You know, obviously, like, the leader of recreation in our state has to be our state organization. And so we just really appreciate that. And we hope that people out there, if they need some help, like, I know I'm going to speak for Don, but for me as well,
absolutely,
we're there. You can call us anytime. We're in the directory. And we'll definitely be able to help you out. So thank you, guys.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Park Spark. For more information about the Florida Recreation and Park Association, please visit frpa.org.